Earth Matters, a weekly segment of environmental news.
Our demands may be radical, but the demands of the Earth are truly non-negotiable. Corporations and biology do not mix.
We're all seeing less of the sun, according to scientists who've documented 5 decades of sunlight measurements. They've reached the disturbing conclusion that the amount of solar energy reaching the Earth's surface has been gradually falling. There was a staggering drop in sunlight records from all around the world. Global dimming appears to be caused by air pollution and may exacerbate global warming in unpredictable ways, say the British scientists who filed the story with the BBC. According to the World Meteorological Organization, 2004 was the fourth hottest year on record since 1861. The Bush administration has announced that it will simply cut funding for the collection of climate and temperature data. One of the last large wilderness old-growth forests on the West Coast is being logged. Oregon's 500,000-acre Biscuit Fire of 2002 prompted the Bush administration to pass the Healthy Forests Initiative, known to environmentalists as the No Tree Left Behind Act. 7 logging sales include the Fiddler Mountain and Babyfoot Lake area, a beautiful place graced by unroded forests, rare flowers, scenic views, and hiking trails. The Bush Forest Service put Fiddler Mountain on the chopping block and sold it for a minimum subsidized bid price. As a result, 14.7 million board feet of logging has begun in 697 acres of old-growth forest at heavy taxpayer expense.
As our home planet Earth becomes ever more polluted and toxic, as we watch our fellow creatures go extinct before our eyes, as climate change accelerates, shocking even the scientists who study it, and as we face epidemics of cancer and other diseases, the Bush administration refuses to even acknowledge these problems. Indeed, the neoconservative agenda may as well be a death sentence for life on Earth. Joining me on the phone from her home in Australia is a passionate, articulate advocate of citizen action, Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's devoted the last 35 years of her life to educating us about the medical hazards of the nuclear age and the radical social and political change we need to save the world. Helen is a medical doctor, a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize, founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility, author of many books including If You Love This Planet, Missile Envy, and A Desperate Passion. Dr. Helen Caldicott, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Amanda.
Let's start with the Bush administration. What is your opinion or your diagnosis of those in charge here in the United States?
Oh, I think it's the most devastating administration America's ever had. They're the most dangerous people I've ever seen, and they're overtly dangerous. I mean, they're not even trying to hide it. They say what they're going to do, and they do it. They push ahead with everything. I mean, they couldn't have chosen an agenda which is overtly more dangerous on purpose. And the fact that the American people go along with them and even voted them back in indicates a kind of psychopathy, I think. That's my word, made up. Bush overtly lies continuously. And my daughter, Penny, who's a doctor here, said, Mum, everything he said was a lie. And I said, yeah, Pen. And there's a Jungian psychiatrist who wrote a wonderful paper about people who follow someone who lies. And, of course, that's happened in relatively recent history.
Are you referring to Nazi Germany or other fascist states?
Yes, I am. They do not give one damn about the future of their children, their grandchildren, or ours, or indeed all the other species on the planet. So we're in serious, serious danger, Amanda.
What can you tell us about the effects of the wars on the environment in Iraq?
Certainly this uranium, when the shells hit the tanks producing powdered form of uranium which lies on the desert floor to be blown up by the winds forevermore. From that perspective, the environmental contamination is severe indeed and getting worse, because I think they've used over 2,000 tons this time. In the first Gulf invasion, they used 360 tons. Then, of course, there are all the oil fires and people setting light to the oil wells, the oil pipelines, which all adds to global warming. Most of the area is desert, of course. The ecosystem is very fragile and big tanks are rolling over it, breaking up the roots of the delicate plants and I suppose destroying the insects and the animals that live there. What really gets me is that the Pentagon or indeed other nations who fight war just don't give a damn about the environment or people's houses. They just roll straight through them with tanks. So from that perspective, it's very serious.
There have been increasingly alarming reports about global climate change coming out in recent weeks. Can you talk about effects of global warming in your part of the world?
I can talk about Australia. We have had the most severe droughts almost that we've ever had since recorded history in recent years. And the sun now is very burning. I used to lie in the sun all day as a child and get tanned. And then, I got a melanoma when I got older. It's so powerful that it's frightening and you turn red in about 10 minutes like a lobster. Australia is at great risk. It's a very, very fragile, ancient continent with fragile ecosystems. Now, the other thing is that in the Antarctic, it's melting and huge, huge chunks of ice the size of Rhode Island are breaking off and floating away as icebergs. The penguins and their chicks can't get to the sea to feed, so millions are going to die. And polar bears are at great risk in the Arctic as well. If you read the literature on global warming, things are very severe. I mean, the permafrost is melting in Alaska and the Northern Hemisphere. They've never seen it melt like this before. Glaciers are disappearing in Europe that have been there forever, in New Zealand and the like. So the signs are all there. It's like diagnosing a patient. But the people in charge mostly are politicians who are scientifically illiterate. They're businessmen, I stress men. So we're in the hands of incompetent people who have no idea what they're doing. And it seems like they're going to go for the last drop of oil before they die so that they can have 60 chandeliers and 10 Rolls Royces. And they don't seem to be able to respond to what will happen to their children, their grandchildren, or their descendants.
For that to happen, we really need to change the way we think and behave.
Well, I think America's got a huge responsibility, Amanda. I can't believe that people are still driving around in those SUVs that do 10 miles to the gallon. It's just obscene. Those vehicles should be banned, and the Americans should be made to conserve. Europe has the same standard of living as the United States, but uses 50% less energy because they conserve. And it's beyond time now for people to have free will and choice who live on an earth that is in grave jeopardy of dying. Be conscious of what you're doing.
A couple of miles per gallon better fuel efficiency would mean that they would never have to go into the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil.
But you shouldn't be using all the oil in the world. America's got no right. It's 5% of the world's population using 40% of the Earth's natural resources. America has absolutely no right to do that. Absolutely no right. And that's one of the reasons there's such animosity abroad now towards the United States, let alone what the Bush administration is arrogantly doing in the international sphere and in Iraq and the like. So people have to learn that they are responsible, not for yourselves and your economy. That's very secondary, for saving God's creation. And when we talk about real moral issues, it's not stem cell research or gay marriage, for God's sake. It's about saving the creation. And we're rushing rapidly, like lemmings, towards the precipice of extinction.
Can you talk about getting closer to nature, having appropriate reverence for nature?
I certainly get my refuge and solace and my sense of spirituality from nature where I walk amongst the forest, hear the lyrebirds and the kookaburras and see the pelicans and the sea eagles circling overhead. And I tend my vegetable garden and bring in vegetables that have never seen any pesticide at all. And the joy of eating fresh, clean food is unbelievable. And you can have a vegetable garden in the tiniest plot of land, particularly in California. But if you don't get in touch with nature, the truth is you're not in touch with God. You'll never find God in those cathedrals that men built. They're empty. They're sterile. God is in nature. They're the cathedrals, the trees, the redwoods arching overhead. That's where God is.
What is it, do you think, in the human psyche or physiology that drives some of us to dominate, to control, to destroy?
That's a good question, Amanda. The next book I want to write is called Why Men Kill, and I'm dedicating it to Donald Rumsfeld. And I have a big picture of him inside the front cover on the frontispiece. I want to look at it from sociobiological perspective. For instance, 3 million years ago when we were troglodytes, men had to kill the saber-toothed tigers and the marauding tribes to save their genes and their babies in the caves. And I don't think that killing instinct has changed one iota for 3 million years. It's now refined and sophisticated, and we can kill by pressing a button in Florida and kill people in Iraq. It's the same thing, though. We just don't smell the blood and the intestines hanging out from eviscerated bodies. And I want to look at the neurophysiological perspectives of the estrogen receptors in the brain, which are quite different to the testosterone receptors. I want to really explore it as a physician and a diagnostician to find out what it is about men killing. And God is always on the side of the killers. And, you know, if you go to Europe, in every square there's a man on a horse who killed thousands. We pedestalize killers. I say there's a bell-shaped curve of men. On one end are the men who are probably listening to this now who would never touch a fly. In the middle are the majority of men who like to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds, and that's why they sell the cars the way they do. And then there are the men, a few men on the opposite end of the bell-shaped curve, like Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz, etc., who I think whose reptilian midbrain has a toxic reaction to testosterone. And they're the people I want to examine. They're neurotically compulsive for power, and they're terribly dangerous.
So fascinating. Helen, what advice do you have for activists and those who want to do something for the Earth?
Look, I don't like being defined as an activist, and I don't think any of us should be. Rather, I like being defined as a conservative, because I'm for conserving the creation and life on the planet. Anyone who's deeply religious or spiritual or has any sense of moral responsibility, and that's most of us actually, will take on the task of saving the creation and life on the planet. It's big, but there's nothing else worth doing in life. And if you can't get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, I have done everything I could do yesterday save the earth in one sphere or another, then you really can't live with yourself. And I quote Martin Luther King. He said, unless a man, and he always talks about men, has something to die for and will die for it, life is not really worth living. And I think that's really where we stand now, Amanda.
And that was Dr. Helen Caldicott, whose websites are nuclearpolicy.org and helencaldicott.com. Thank you, Helen, for joining us today on Flashpoints.
That's a pleasure, Amanda.
In Berkeley, reporting for Flashpoints, this is Amanda Bellerby.